Hey everyone, before we get started, just a reminder to go over to iTunes, rate and review the podcast. Ratings and reviews over there really help boost listens. So if you have a chance, go over there and do that. And also dfsr.com/MLB will get you a free 3-day trial to our projection system powered by Lineup Lab, optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. All right, full Friday in baseball. Let's get it on. All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our MLB podcast for Friday, August 4th. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis.
Sounding much better than a second ago, which is good news. All right, we are here to discuss, man, that sounds too formal. We're here to talk, gab, shoot the S on baseball.
Debate.
What do you think? Debate? And we don't usually debate too much. We usually kind of agree.
Yeah, usually you're asking me questions and then you're going, totally. That's a good call.
Great call, dude. Totally. Let's
nice
next
call,
guy.
By the way, dude.
Oh, excellent. Excellent call on that. Oh, just another your 50th straight great call in this podcast.
Damn,
it's amazing.
James, back at again with the great calls.
All right, we're going to talk a pretty full Friday here in baseball. We'll probably skip the first, the 2 o'clock game and the 6 o'clock game. They're on the schedule. They kind of just these weird, well, the 6 o'clock game is pretty much totally washed, but there are some early 2:20 slates with the Cubs and the Nationals, Cincinnati and Cardinals. I think we can just pretty much skip those because I'm not sure how interested people are going to be in that and kind of focus on the 7 p.m. games, of which there are many. So we can get started here. So pitching today is interesting. I'm wondering where things end up. There's a few betting lines, like Vegas lines, that are not in yet right now. The Arizona-San Francisco game is not in as we speak, and then the Tampa Bay-Milwaukee game is not in. I'm actually not sure why those games don't have lines in them. Like, all the pitchers have been announced, and all the information seems like it's there, and yet there's no lines there. And it could actually affect the projections for a couple of those guys like Bumgarner and Feria, who we're going to talk about. But just as a point of reference here at 9:30 a.m. on a Friday, we don't have that information yet.
Yeah, the Tampa Bay one's bizarre because they play inside, right? So what could change? I guess it's like lineup things, or maybe they're trying to figure out who Brandon Woodruff is or something, and they just want to dot their I's and cross their T's. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure. It's weird. I think Woodruff actually has pitched before too, so I don't think it's not like there's just all these crazy unknowns. And like, I think it's kind of the same deal for the San Francisco game as well. I mean, the game's outside, but at this point, like, that's not. I guess there's some wind stuff there in San Francisco, but either way, we don't have that information right now. It could come in while we're recording the podcast. I'll keep refreshing our Vegas feed to see if that stuff comes in. Otherwise, with the information we do have, who do you see as the top, like, cash game pitcher here? There's some good arms going here. No one's, like, it's not like sort of like yesterday where we had, like, the very top of the mountain with the guys like Kluber and Alex Wood. And Kluber ended up becoming, like, ridiculous. Actually, way chalkier than I thought he would be. He was, like, 65% owned on FanDuel. I was really surprised by that. But who do you see sort of as the top-tier pitcher going on this slate?
Well, we have a premier matchup going tonight with Darvish and DeGrom squaring off against one another. Our system is leaning towards Darvish right now for a couple of reasons. The first is that you don't see this happening with DeGrom often, but the Dodgers are favored against them. So, you know, that always helps for win expectation. But Darvish is very cheap. He's 9,300. And that's just a great price for a guy who's favored, who has double-digit K per nine kind of stuff. The walks are down under 3 for 9, which is not like anything world beating, but better than earlier in his career. And I think moving from Texas and moving to the National League, getting to face the pitcher is only going to increase his K expectation, and getting to face the Mets doesn't hurt either. You know, they're kind of a middle of the road team when it comes to hitting right-handed pitching. So I think up and down here, it looks like a pretty good spot to grab Darvish.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. This is his first start since coming to the Dodgers, so it'll be interesting to see how they handle him. Just with, you know, how they handle the rest
pitch
of their pitching staff.
Cetera, yeah.
They're pretty kid glove style when it comes to their arms. And I don't know if Darvish is going to fit that mold for them. I mean, I don't know if he's a guy that like sort of just needs to have his pitches, or like what kind of thing gets dictated.
He was managed that way this year in Texas as well. Like, he wasn't really topping 100 pitches either. So I think we still have a pretty reasonable baseline for him. It's not like early in his career or even early this season when they were like, it's Darvish, man. He can throw 17 different pitches and go 150 pitches. Like, I think they realize that that's not really true when he was dealing with some injury stuff. So, I suspect he'll be right around that 100 pitch count mark, but I suspect that to be enough on a sub $10,000 salary.
He's not a huge favorite. It's only like minus 130, something like that, which is pretty low for him. But I think you're right on the price. So on FanDuel, he's only 9,300. Sub $10,000 pitchers like this are pretty easy calls, I think, most times. I mean, DeGrom is, I don't know, is DeGrom significantly more expensive? Yeah, 10.5. So he's 1,200 more on FanDuel. DeGrom is 1,200 more on FanDuel, and I believe he's 1,700 more. Yeah, he's 1,700 more on DraftKings. I don't think you need to pay all the way up. DeGrom's like the better pitcher for sure. This is a bad matchup for him. The Dodgers are a pretty good hitting team. So, you know, like you said, he's an underdog. I don't think, yeah, in this case, I don't think I would want to pay more for a guy that has a couple other things against him, even though he is just a better, he is a better overall arm than Darvish. I'm not like so confident in Darvish here. Like I really just don't like playing Darvish in general. That's just more of a
travesty, dude.
Yeah, just, it's one of these things. Like, I'm not, like, look, I don't ever take emotions like this or my own. Like, I can't, like, crystallize completely why I don't like it, but, and it's not going to be a thing where I, like, X him out and don't play him, just, even though the system says it. I'm happy to go with the correct inputs
well,
here.
Your problem, Doug, is actually watching the games a lot of times because Darvish is one of those guys, like, the classic Giovanni Gallardo, like, the type of people where you own him and he's out there. And all you can think is, what did I do to myself? Why would I sign up for a night of this? You know, just watching him like take forever on the mound, like eventually throw a curveball in the dirt and then go back and do it again.
Run every count 0-2 to 3-2 somehow.
That's what I mean. So like I totally get the reasons why it's not very fun to play Darvish. It might wind up being the best spot. I will say that right now there is an outlier that we're waiting to see where Vegas comes in on, and that's Madison Bumgarner against Arizona. Arizona, I talked about this yesterday on the podcast, but they're one of the more dramatic teams in the league when it comes to their platoon splits. Granted that that's been helped with the arrival of JD Martinez, but still right near the bottom of the league in terms of being one of the best overall matchups for lefties, striking out at the second highest rate in the league and a bottom five team in terms of WOBA. So, and the opposing pitcher that's going for them, what's this guy's name? Anthony Banda. Banda. Can't stand you. That guy is not going to inspire any great fear in the hearts of the Giants hitters as well. So also great hitters, or I'm sorry, great pitchers park. So I wouldn't be surprised. You know, if that line comes in low enough, he might challenge Darvish. But as of right now, Darvish is looking like a pretty clear-cut play.
And I can't remember the guy's name, Tavola, whoever the Diamondbacks manager is. We talked about this yesterday with like not being able to make lineups. He did the same thing yesterday.
Buddy, my heart hurt when I saw that come in. I was like, I just cringed knowing that you were going to have to see that for yourself. I like wanted to hide your eyes from it like you would my child at a car accident.
Well, yeah, he hit like Blanco first and Rosales second. Like it just doesn't hit. It's like who are two auto outs that I can throw at the top of this thing? Hey,
me coach, you really want me to bat in front of everybody? Like I'm the first guy that goes out. Okay,
it just doesn't make any sense. I'm not. I went through the whole thing spiel yesterday. I'm not going to do it again. But that does help. It does help Bumgarner that like when you have an opposing manager that just like doesn't understand these very basic concepts. I think you're right. If that line came in at like Bumgarner minus 150 at like 7.5 over under, 8 over under, something like that, then I think actually there is a chance that he does jump over Darvish's, or at least comes really close to Darvish's projection here. So no, yeah, that's a good point, because right now we have it like just sort of like a placeholder, just kind of average kind of game Vegas line going when we don't have those things, and that's not going to be the case here for Bumgarner as well. Okay, so Darvish and Bumgarner, probably see them as pretty close here on DraftKings. Probably the savings you get on Darvish, no matter what happens on FanDuel, you get $1,000 savings on Darvish. I can't imagine Bumgarner's no Vegas thing is going to kick him over Darvish in that case. After those two guys, and I'm kind of just nodded at DeGrom a little bit, DraftKings starting pitcher two, guys that we can pivot to in tournaments. There's just some of these guys are coming a little cheaper on DraftKings, look like they might be in good spots. Wondering your thoughts there.
Yeah, so DraftKings pitcher two, obviously, like we don't need to talk about this every single day, but it's sometimes tough to get two name studs in there. The guy I'm kind of leaning towards right now, and you know, we still need a line, but you know, based on my estimation, I think it will come in an appropriate level, is Jacob Faria. You know, Faria is a rookie coming up this season. He's averaged better than 6 innings per start, which is very unusual for rookies and just pitchers in general in the majors these days. That number doesn't sound too high, but it's actually a lot higher than you might think. And the peripherals have been solid, you know, 8.5 Ks per nine, around 3 walks per nine. The XFIP is a lot higher than the ERA, but I think a lot of that is a result of the low ground ball rate. And just keep in mind that you're not going to be as punished for a low ground ball rate in Tampa Bay as you are other places. Tampa Bay greatly depresses hitting power, and guys like Faria who give up a lot of fly balls, that's going to actually work to their advantage rather than their detriment. So I do like Faria quite a bit here. You get some pretty significant savings, which is always important on DraftKings. And the opposing team in Milwaukee is just a kind of a good spot. You know, they can hit a little bit, but they strike out a ton, 25.4% K rate. And the opposing pitcher here, again, just someone who's not going to do his team any favors in Brandon Woodruff, who, you know, has never pitched an inning in the major leagues. So, yeah, up and down, I just like the spot for Faria quite a bit.
Yeah, that bottom of that lineup will strike out a lot. Aguilar against righties is going to strike out. Santana strikes out a ton. Keon Broxton strikes out a ton. There's a lot of...
The Brewers, by the way, just another team that falls into your candidate of just randomly batting guys towards the top of the lineup. Like, you want to get a little Domingo Santana on the top? Sure, let's go.
Eric Sogard. Like, it doesn't make a ton of sense. I do like him facing the bottom of that lineup. Like I said, I do like the... It's a big park downshift for them. It'll be interesting to see where Vegas comes in on that. I suspect Rays are a slight favorite, not huge, maybe something like -140 if I were to guess, but probably not too much more than that. Wondering your thoughts on a guy like Ivan Nova. He doesn't, so on DraftKings he's pretty cheap. Like, he's only $7,800. Pirates are a decent favorite. His issue, of course, he doesn't strike anybody out, but he does have a pretty elite ground ball rate. Like, he's up over 50% of ground balls for his career. He just, you know, really no fly balls at all for him. So 29% fly ball rate for his career, which is insanely low to keep that many balls like out of the air. At what point, San Diego's a pretty good matchup. Paul Bark's pretty good, slight favorite. At what point can you like sort of say, I know I'm not going to get any K's here. The guy kind of just goes like 6.5 innings every game because he just gets so many ground ball outs and just gets at, you know, through. It's like the opposite of, well, I'm not really comparing him and Darvish, but he doesn't run a lot of long counts because he's actually just pitching to contact. He wants the guys to just get ground balls and get out of there. Do you think that is enough? Like, that kind of profile is enough to think about slotting him here into starting pitcher two? He's only 7,800, so he's cheaper than Ferry. You're not going to get the strikeouts, but you theoretically get more innings and outs.
Yeah, the innings, I mean, he goes slightly more innings. Ferry has been comparable, but you'd have to think that with Nova, it's a little bit safer. I think if you're playing Nova here, you're playing him a lot less for his skills than you are for the matchup itself. And the Padres are the best matchup in the majors for right-handed pitching. There's no doubt about it. You know, one of the top couple K rates and bottom two team in terms of WBA. So, yeah, you love the matchup. I just don't know, you know, this is always the devil's bargain. Like, is it worth paying a guy who strikes out fewer than six guys per inning? Or six guys per inning, that would be a lot. Is it worth playing a guy who strikes out fewer than six guys per nine innings? I don't know. I don't know, like, at middling prices. I just don't know if that's ever correct, just because you get basically enough points for a strikeout as you do for pitching a whole inning. So, you know, shaving off those strikeouts is very significant. I think if with a gun to my head, I would rather play Faria here. I could stomach Nova if it meant I could get some great bats. I do think the floor is relatively high, so, you know, that's kind of good, but... it's just not going to feel... I'm not excited about it, I guess. I would never play him in a big tournament for starters, but for cash games, I could see it, but be less than excited.
Yeah, like I said, the 6.5 innings, the average of 6.5 innings per game has got to be one of the highest in the league without looking it up. But definitely the highest in like this kind of price range. I'm with you. It doesn't feel amazing to do it, and I really wouldn't consider it in almost any spot except that the price is low enough, the matchup's pretty good, and he's like a -180 favorite, so you have some win expectation on your side. That's one of the higher lines for any pitcher today. That's kind of where I think I've like considered Nova like two or three times this entire year, maybe not even that many, maybe like twice. And it has to be like these perfect spots, right? And he has to be the good matchup. The Paul Barker needs to be in his favor, needs to be a pretty heavy favorite, because that's really the only time he's going to make up for, like you said, the fact that he doesn't strike anybody out. Anyone else kind of jumping out to you here, starting pitcher two? Wise, I have a couple more names. I'm wondering if we agree.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple other guys I would consider. I mean, if you really want to go dustbin, you can think about Trevor Bauer. This is more of a big tournament play. It's not going to feel great. The ERA has been a disaster. There's a lot of reasons to not like Bauer, but the peripherals are still competitive, and the $6,300 price tag is just so cheap. The getting a guy who can strike out 10 guys per nine innings, that's, you know, that's good. I feel disgusting even mentioning his name because it's basically not worked out at all this season, and he's up against the Yankees, so this is in no way a safe proposition. But a guy who can run out there and get some strikeouts, run hot and have a good game, still has a 3.7 xFIP. I don't know, stranger things have happened, but yeah, it's not going to be, that's like for your $1 huge tournament where you want to be the only guy playing Bauer sort of situation. But I still think it's kind of reasonable. I mean, he's so cheap, right?
No, yeah, I don't mind it at all, actually, just because the Yankees, they're a good offense for sure. You're getting them out of Yankee Stadium. you know, they have some guys at the top of the lineup that are going to cause you problems, but you're really, at this point, you're looking for, like, that 10% game, or, like, you know, the 10% game that he's capable of, but he just hasn't really put it together this year. The home runs have really bitten him, and we've been consistently high in Bauer the entire season. Just hasn't really worked out, just because, and, like, that ERA is so much higher than the xFIP. Just mostly he's just getting killed on the home runs and the left on base stuff. So no, I don't mind it for a big tournament at all. But I mean, clearly, very, very far from anything with cash games. I don't mind Eduardo Rodriguez here. The White Sox are a bad team, so they have a lot of righty hitters. There are a lot of bad righty hitters, so you don't really it doesn't really matter too much to me, like, that he's going to get into, like, just having some platoon issues here. The top of their lineup strikes out a ton. Anderson K's like something like 25-30% of the time. Saladino K's a ton. Davidson K's a ton. The bottom of their lineup is an absolute just trash bin of players, like Delmonico, Lurie Garcia, Adam Engel. Like, these guys are complete nobodies. I mean, this is a team that they sold off and they've given up, and they got a lot of back, so I think they're probably going to be good for the future, but the future is not now in Chicago. Rodriguez's issue is he walks a lot of guys. The strikeout rate's pretty great, though. 10 Ks per nine this year in 75 innings. 3.5 walks. It's not great. The xFIP isn't great. He's one of these sort of like in that same sort of Bauer range of, like, he can probably turn it on enough with some Ks. I think that, like, you have some upside there if you can hang in the game. There's some severe downside if he allows contact, because righties and Fenway can erase mistakes, like, pretty quickly by just popping one over the fence, but or over the Green Monster. Do you think Rodriguez is in a good enough spot here? It feels risky. It's actually, to me, it's risky, but, like, I would prefer playing him in a cash game over, like, Bauer, let's say.
Yeah, I think that's a reasonable take. I mean, the tricky part with Rodriguez is he just doesn't go deep into games whatsoever. Like, he has only pitched past the sixth inning once all season, and that was in May against Oakland. So it just hasn't been a great stretch for him there. He obviously took the whole month of June off and most of July with injury. So, you know, who knows if he's really the same guy he is peripherally. I will note that since coming back, let's see here. Well, the start he went out, he gave up 7 runs. Since then, he's given up 11 earned runs in 14 innings. So it hasn't been a great stretch for him since returning. But I think the upside is there. I mean... all of this to say, it doesn't sound like a guy who I'd be interested in playing in cash games. I do think the upside is there, but I think you're basically, if you're playing Rodriguez, you're doing so with the mindset that you're going to be a day early on him than everyone else rather than a day late. And that's always risky, but it pays off when it works.
Yeah, and actually one other guy we didn't mention here is Paxton. He's in a good spot, too, against Kansas City. He's a little expensive. On DraftKings, he's 12-2. On FanDuel, he's up over 10,000. I'm not sure. I mean, he's been really good this year. So, 10.5 strikeouts. He's been really, really good, actually. 10.5 strikeouts per nine, 3.23 xFIP. Price probably takes him out of consideration, I think, though. This is one of those things that could end up being close, and actually probably will matter a little bit on what the Royals lineup ends up being. Do you see Paxton, like, sort of fitting into any of these cash game discussions? I feel like I kind of just glossed over him. He probably should have been in that group at the top that we mentioned.
Sure. No, I think he's worth discussing, but I just don't know. I don't know. Like, the matchup isn't as good as, say, Bumgarner. The price isn't as good as Darvish. I think he winds up just kind of being in the middle somewhere, kind of in a no man's land for cash game purposes. Terrific big tournament play, because I think most people will observe that as well. But yeah, I just don't. I mean, I like Paxton. Great pitcher. I just don't know if he's going to wind up being the exact guy who shows up in lineups.
All right, we're going to hit some stacks up here. Get us with a sponsor before we do that.
Yeah, right on. So let's talk about FantasyFactor.com. FantasyFactor.com is a great place to go and play the types of tournaments, you know, if you want to buy in from, say, $5 to $50 and just play against other casual players, or if you're a good player, play against casual players for somewhat lower buy-ins. Traditional salary cap games like you're used to, minus the big sharks putting in 200 lineups each. So check out FantasyFactor.com. Use promo code DFSR to get a 25% no-drip bonus. That means if you put $100 in, you get $125 to play with right away. You don't have to play like $5,000 worth of contest to release it like you do in many other places. So good folks at Fantasy Factor. Check them out and see you over there.
We have a game in Coors that usually has to just lead off any discussion of stacks. It's the Phillies in Colorado. Phillies, they've been price corrected pretty strongly here for a team that's just not very good to begin with. Their implied runs are really low, like really in the low fives right now, which for Coors, typically that kind of run line for a team coupled with whatever the sites do to just, you know, dramatically increase their average pricing like by like 20 to 25%. I just don't know if the Phillies end up getting there in terms of like our system at least. I can see people playing. It'll be interesting to see ownership percentages on them. I don't mind the Rockies side of the ball, though I always get a little worried when they face guys like Velasquez who do have K stuff. But wondering your thoughts. Do you think that's a game we really should focus on, or do we kind of like want to look elsewhere possibly because of the prices?
Yeah, the prices probably are a little bit prohibitive here. I will say Velasquez, he's an interesting guy for to stack against. I mean, you're not going to sneak up on anybody by stacking the Coors bats. But if other people's perception is that this is a night where you don't need to spend up for Coors, it might be an interesting time to key in on the Rockies. Velasquez has really struggled with the home run ball throughout his career. He's averaged 1.4 home runs per nine, and obviously that's outside of the friendly confines of Coors Field. And that's just because he gives up so much hard contact. His home run to fly ball ratio is 15%. But that is pretty much just the kind of pitcher he is. Like, he, when he makes mistakes, he makes them up in the zone, and the balls travel a long way when people get a hold of him. Also, has historically just generated essentially no fly or no ground balls, a 36% career ground ball rate. So, yeah, I like the Coors bats. I, you know, it's not as good a spot as normal for cash game purposes, but still a very reasonable spot if you just want to get some big tournament upside.
After, there's a lot of bad pitchers going today. The list is real long with some of these guys that are just subpar or below that kind of label. Where do you see us? Is there a team that you want to concentrate on here? Team that jumps out to you? Like I said, there's just a lot. There are a lot of bad pitchers going today.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think the Red Sox are going to be the chalk sort of obvious start, especially if you play Darvish and you could pay up to get all those more expensive bats in the lineup. But even on the Red Sox, like, the bats aren't even that expensive right now. I'm curious to know what you think about these prices, because you can get Hanley at 29, Bogarts at 29. You can play Mookie Betts at 41, so you're paying up a little bit there. If Chris Young happens to show up, you can get him at 2,400. Like, you can get a lot of Red Sox against a very bad pitcher for next to nothing.
Yeah, no, they seem too cheap. Hanley specifically is the one that seems way too cheap right here.
Maybe play Nunez too, you know, in the platoon matchup. Like, this is a great spot.
Yeah, no, I do think you see them as pretty popular plays. Carlos Rodon walks. I mean, he's a weird one because he'll have spurts of just being able to. He has like real K stuff. 11.6 Ks per nine this season. More than a K printing for his career. A little bit bigger sample, much bigger sample, obviously. He's not as bad as his this season. He's not been as bad as the 5+ ERA would suggest. Like, the xFIP is more like 4.2. His career xFIP is under 4. I wouldn't call him. He's not horrible. His problem this year is that he's just walking like almost 6 batters per nine. Like, and that, you know, he's coming off some injury stuff. He worries me a little bit because he is kind of a guy that can, he has the profile of a pitcher that can turn in a good performance if he can just limit the walks some. Red Sox are a bad team for his kind of profile because they're extremely patient. So I wouldn't call him a bad pitcher. I think I'm with you that the Red Sox, the pricing on the Red Sox in terms of their run line is just way too cheap on FanDuel. But yeah, I guess I wouldn't call Rodon a bad pitcher.
Well, I guess I would be careful about calling him anything other than that, just because basically everything across the board just looks too high. It looks like when someone was multiplying things and calculating people's lines, it's just like you're like, well, 12 Ks per nine, 6 walks per nine, 2 home runs per nine. Like, what? Hold on a second here. And you'd like go back and double check the line. But I don't know. Rodon, he has upside. Like, it's totally undeniable. But the simple fact that he walks so many guys and just throws so many pitches means he just can't go deep in a game. So one way or the other, say you're going to get 4 or 5 innings out of Rodon, which has been basically every game this season. And again, you're against the uber patient Red Sox. And then you just get to dip into that pretty lousy White Sox bullpen, especially their middle relievers. And especially if the Red Sox do beat up on Carlos Rodon, I think you could see a situation where the Red Sox run it up here. Rodon's a pretty heavy fly ball pitcher this season. And the other thing about Rodon is he just gives up a world of hard contact. Like, when people do barrel up the ball, they just send lasers all over the field. Career 323 BABIP. And that's basically what he did in the minors as well. So he's a guy that just doesn't. He just doesn't generate soft contact the way many pitchers with similar stuff do. So I think this is a terrific spot to just jam as many Red Sox as you can for cash game purposes and really in any format.
Yeah, I'm with it. There's a nice bad pitching matchup, both sides of it. Twins and Rangers. We have Bartolo Colon versus Martin Perez. Hard to know which side of this to grab more of just because both these guys are pretty damn bad. Is that a game that you are going to take a look at? Colon, his numbers are really something, man. 5.5 Ks per nine, 5X FIP, just continues to. I mean, I guess he can pitch innings, and I guess to some teams that's just valuable because You just need someone to go out to the mound and throw some pitches so the fans are able to like buy tickets and go to the games. But
yeah, to get you to your middle relievers.
Sure. Yeah, exactly. Do you see this as a game you kind of want to?
I love both sides of this game. You know, I mean, I've said no shortage of unpleasant things about Bartolo Colon's pitching repertoire. You know, he's kind of been able to make it work recently, but just like anyone who's dancing these fine lines of basically having no stuff and getting by just on not walking people and hoping that batted balls find gloves, that's just going to expire at some point. And Colon's age 44 season seems like as good a time as any. So.
I see that old. My God, I didn't realize his age 40. You don't hear that a lot. The age 44 season.
He's really on the backslide now that he's in his age 44 season. So, yeah, I mean, that's obviously a great spot. Martin Perez, also an interesting pitcher to target a stack against. His line for this season, sub 6 Ks per 9. He's actually significantly better than he was last year when he was just one of the very worst. But you know, sub 6 Ks per 9, also more than 3 walks per 9. Just giving up an incredible amount of hard contact as usual. A 350 BABIP is not too dissimilar from his 310 career line, although obviously running a little bit cold there. But yeah, just kind of generically bad, you know, not really much to say there other than he's not a pitcher that anyone would be excited to see pitch for their home team. That line's pushed up to 11 now. Vegas loves both sides of this game, and I do too.
Yeah, and I like pretty much all the whole top of the order for both teams, Chu, Andrews, Mazzara, even Odor down in 5. His price has come up a little bit. He was coming so cheap for a while that the price, a couple home runs and some ownership issues, and all of a sudden his price has jumped back up to where it actually should be. Same thing for the Twins. They've kind of juggled the top of their order around at times. I mean, not with Dozier, but after that.
Oh, you're going to get Dozier. And Dozier against the lefty, too, by the way. That's where most of his power has come throughout his career, so he's in a tremendous spot tonight.
Yeah, he's going to be, I suspect he's like a chalk play, 3,300 on FanDuel. He's already showing up in all of our lineups right now. I don't think that's going to change. That price is just is simply too cheap. Where else can we look? A couple more stacks before we get out of here.
All righty. So another pitcher that's going tonight that I'm pretty skeptical of his overall ability is Travis Wood. He's pitching for San Diego against the Pirates. Now, the Pirates are not a conventional stack team. When you look at their, for instance, team totals against left-handed pitching, they're not super impressive. But what the Pirates do have are guys that bat from the right side of the plate that can beat the heck out of some left-handed pitching that stinks. And I'm talking mostly about the top three guys in the order in Marte Harrison and McCutcheon, and then David Freese as well at 5. Now, the bottom of the lineup, you're not going to be looking too kindly on. You're not going to want to play like Ozuna or Cervelli or whoever winds up batting towards the bottom of the lineup. But I do think the top guys offer some pretty interesting upside against a guy who this season is just been an abomination. You know, like a 5.4 XFIP, that would be one of the worst in the majors if he managed to pitch enough innings to qualify, but he doesn't. And most of that came out of the bullpen. So he should theoretically have the advantage of, you know, pitching against guys who haven't seen his stuff and are kind of caught off guard. Well, that just hasn't translated. 6.4 ERA. The guy is just not really a major league quality pitcher at this point, and I think the Pirates are in a position to capitalize.
Oh, yeah. Marte's another one that's going to be, I mean, at least for our
purposes. Did I mention Marte?
You did. You mentioned the top three guys. I'm just saying Marte specifically, 3,000 on FanDuel, way too cheap if he's hitting leadoff in this spot. Has, you know, power and speed upside. This is the better side of his platoon split. He's another guy I suspect is a chalk play just because the price has just come down. Like he and Dozier are guys that I think will be. He, Dozier, I would say those two guys, Hanley and Betts, for our purposes, are going to be in just about like every lineup, at least on FanDuel, because they're just, the matchup is too good and the prices are just simply too low. Even down the bottom of that Pirates lineup, you do get guys like Ozuna and Cervelli who can maybe just fit a need by coming cheap on the better side of their splits. Not the best hitters in the world, but 2,500 and 2,400 respectively for those guys can get the job done, specifically Cervelli at catcher, just because catcher is just traditionally a top. There's like three good offensive catchers, then you're kind of just taking, you typically going bargain hunting on that position just because you just need to kind of get out of there cheap. One other team that I had here, Astros versus Cesar Velez. Astros have been a little bit banged up. That doesn't seem like it's going to matter too much with a guy like Valdez who really can't strike anybody out, which is a huge problem when you face the Astros because they're already very difficult to strike out. And if you don't have any real K upside at all, they're just gonna continue to put the ball in play. Like guys like Altuve. What'd you say, Altuve? You said it to me before. What did Altuve bat in July? Like
batted 485 in the month of July.
Yeah, that's insane. He's batting like 365 for the season. He's not gonna strike. Like that ball's going into play, so don't worry about that. And guys like Reddick, Gurriel, these guys that are gonna hit the top of the lineup are just in a really good spot. Against Valdez, they're a little more expensive than some of the other teams we mentioned here just because they've been consistently good all season. But again, there's just so many bad pitchers here. It's going to be hard to know exactly who to hone in on.
Well, I've got more, Doug. So the other team I think that people might be sleeping on a little bit tonight is the Rays. You know, I mentioned Brandon Woodruff earlier, kind of offhand, but he's a guy, he's extremely young. He's 24 years old. He's only been in the minors for 4 years and hasn't really had much success there. I mean, he's been okay, but like he's got a 4.64 or something ERA in the minor leagues, and he's just not super great. The Rays can just pound right-handed pitching. Yes, the Rays strike out a lot. So, you know, if you're looking for your cash game purposes, maybe it's not where you want to hone in. But, you know, you get Dickerson. They've got Duda there now. Logan Morrison in the four slot. They do have some good left-handed hitting at the top of that lineup. And a guy like Woodruff, like, you just never know. When someone comes up from the minors who doesn't seem like he has the qualifications to pitch in the majors, we could see some serious bloodbath situations going on. Woodruff also has averaged less than 5 innings per start in the minors, too. So, you know, the Rays could really get to feast on some bullpen action. I do think their left-handed bats in particular are poised to be one of those teams that could just easily be at the top of GPP lineups.
I'm with you. We've talked about this in the podcast a couple times here. The Rays, just the simple addition of Duda in the middle of the lineup,
Duda
really just takes, you know, it's such a huge plus for them, because it takes that the one thing they were sort of lacking there, and just replace. They were using like replacement level players in that spot, and now they're able to bat a guy who just has like legit major league power.
Oh yeah, he's just Luda, like Ludacris, the rapper. Well, I was thinking in my mind, this is just real talk for a second. I was thinking that Dukas Luda would be a cooler name for him than Lucas Duda. And then I just called him Luda anyway. But now he's a real hitter now. Like he's an actual, looks like a true talent, 900 OPS guy. Most of that comes from when he faces right-handed pitching. So yeah, he's a very, very serious threat. And he does, for fantasy purposes, make all the guys that bat around him better, because he's going to get on base more, and for Dickerson in particular, he's going to drive him in more. So yeah, it's a cool spot.
All right, we're going to get out of here. Enjoy a full Friday in baseball. Still time to grab a free 3-day trial to our projection system, dfsr.com/MLB will get you that. We're going to have some football full season pricing coming in here as we start to release some of the stuff that we have going for football. Really excited about. But anyway, enjoy a full Friday in baseball. I'm going to talk to you off the air in a second, but for everyone else, we'll talk to you again
on
Tuesday.
It's hard to imagine that I won't enjoy it anymore more than I will, Doug. So thank you.